This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas visited the White House last Friday. Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon is there today. The agenda is the Middle East roadmap and progress towards peace. Though both sides say the other has not done nearly enough, the past few weeks have been relatively quiet. After decades of frustrated opportunities, deepening distrust, suspicion, and escalating cycles of violence, though, the peace process is clearly fragile. Indeed, some on both sides would say it's illusory. This week, we'll explore opinions about the way ahead. We'll talk with thinkers from both sides, Israelis today, Palestinians at this time on Wednesday. We'll hear differing views from both sides, personal opinions about the roadmap, the occupation, terrorism, and the role of the United States. And in both programs, we'll also hear from pollsters to get an idea of where public opinion stands. If you have questions about the U.S. role, give us a phone call. We'd also like to hear from those of you with relatives in Israel about what you're hearing from them. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And remember, this Wednesday we'll be hearing a variety of opinions from the Palestinian side. Today, though, we start with the Israeli point of view. Our first interview joins us on the line from Jerusalem. Writer David Grossman is a novelist, essayist, and peace advocate. His latest book is a collection of essays titled Death as a Way of Life, Israel, 10 Years After Oslo. And David Grossman, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon for you.
Good afternoon. I'd like to begin where you end. Your last essay is dated September of last year. This is on the second anniversary of the most recent Intifada. You write, 2 years have gone by and there is no hope. The situation can be summed up in several ways. I choose to do so by citing two facts that stood out in the reports of the last month. The first, according to data provided by UN agencies, more than a quarter of Palestinian children now suffer from malnutrition as a result of the situation. The second, Israeli school children will soon be given special classes in early identification and detection of suicide bombers. Israelis and Palestinians who refuse to see the connection between these two facts ensure that for many years to come, we will all be each other's hostages, agents of gratuitous and pointless death. Do you still think that there is no hope?
Well, in the last month, since the beginning of this ceasefire, which is called the Hudna, there is some relief in everyday life. There is much less fear in our daily routine. I'm talking about us, the Israelis. We are not so afraid when we go out, when we send our kids on the bus to school, when we sit in restaurants. Nevertheless, I'm afraid that if nothing really serious would not be done, this Hudna would remain another episode in the long conflict. Because if we really want to achieve peace, a ceasefire is not enough. What it really takes is a lot of serious, deep, and even painful steps for both sides. I see only the beginning of the willing to do this on both sides. But from previous experience in the beginning of the Oslo process, we know already that if you want to make peace after so many years of violence, you must be very, very decisive. You must act against your fears, against your instinct of survival at any price. I don't mean that we have to jeopardize ourselves, but we have to take more calculated risks in order to change the situation drastically.
Your book is a fascinating set of essays, 10 years, including many where you admit that you were wrong, including optimistic statements in the past about what might happen. And after one particular horrible episode of a suicide bomber, you write that people were accosting you angrily in the street. Everything you believed in was a dream, they say. You can't make peace with the Palestinians. How can you believe these people? There are times when you openly write of, it seems, despair.
Well, let's say I was quite desperate for times in these 10 years, but I never felt that I can afford the luxury of real despair, of doing nothing, of just sitting on the side and crying, or saying that there is no other way but the way of war. You see, I feel that we exhausted the way of war between us and the Palestinians, and yet we are never tired of trying it again and again and again. While we tried the way of peace only once, actually, in the Oslo process, and even then we did not try it full-heartedly. Both sides were very, very reluctant and full of mutual suspicions, and they were unable to make this huge leap in their consciousness in order to really create the conditions needed in order to change the situation. So, you know, you said, and you quoted me, I said that I was sometimes wrong. Yes, I was wrong. I thought, especially at 1993, that both sides would take this opportunity, this miracle that history granted them, and do something seriously. I thought, or let's say, I did not really estimate the depth of hatred, mutual hatred. I thought that there will be enough rational people on both sides that would be able to overcome the hatred and the mutual fears. And I was wrong, and of course, there were so many elements that inflamed hatred and mutual suspicion, and very soon we realized that the Oslo way will not work for us. But even, you know, when we had me and my friends to my opinion, when we had dreams, it was not an illusion. I'm not talking about an illusionary relationship between us and the Palestinians. I'm not talking about love between Israel and the Arab countries around it. It's not a question of love. You know, it's a very tough neighborhood, the Middle East. The Middle East never really internalized Israel as an integral part of it. And we are not surrounded by the Salvation Army here. I'm talking about a very sober idea about the future relationship between us and the Palestinians. There are so many common interests for us and for them. We are so damaged by this ongoing war that the most important thing, maybe, and now I'll talk as an Israeli, the most important thing for me is not only, you know, that Palestinians will have their state, but that after we finish this immediate conflict, Israel will have the time and the energy to deal with its very deep and serious inner problems. All these problems that have not been dealt with for the last 55 years because we wasted and exhausted all our energy, all our creativity in this almost needless war.
Yet, again, I'm going to perform the awkward task of quoting you to yourself. Beyond that, you write, Israelis say today, you can hear it everywhere, even if we give the Palestinians everything, all the territories, and evacuate the settlements, and even hand over all of East Jerusalem, the following day they'll want the rest of Jerusalem, and Haifa, and Jaffa. They'll always find a new pretext for violence, for nurturing their hatred, and their yearning to throw us into the sea.
Yes, well, this is something that everyone here, I guess, share this fear, and it is a possible reality. But I think that if we have an agreement, and I know that the majority of the Palestinians today are willing to come to a very rational agreement between us and them. If we come to such an agreement, of course they will have their dreams, exactly as many of the Israelis will have their dreams about continuing to have domain over the sacred places in Hebron or in Nablus or in other parts of the occupied territories. And there are Israelis who dream about the big Israeli kingdom, the biblical one. But it all will remain in the frame of dreams and even hallucinations, while I believe that if the majority of the Palestinians will start to enjoy bearable conditions of life with satisfaction to some of their political demands, not all of them. They will not be able to get all their dreams, exactly as we shall not be able to get all our dreams. They will go back to normality. There will be more and more elements in their society that will start to look for the problems inside this society, and there is some hope, some chance, I cannot guarantee anything, that we shall have normal relationship of neighbors. But I can guarantee one thing. I can guarantee that if there will not be a reasonable solution for this conflict, then we are doomed. We, the Israelis and the Palestinians, we shall live by our sword and die by our sword. And this is something that is unbearable and can be solved in a very, I will not say simple way, but in a way that would satisfy both sides.
Let's get our listeners involved. Our number again, 800-989-8255, the email address totn@npr.org. And Tony joins us on the line from Fort Lauderdale in Florida.
Hello.
Hi.
I'd like to make a comment just based on how my perspective and the whole issue has changed over the last probably 13 years since I graduated from college. I used to think that the Israelis were the biggest bullies and animals there were. Up until the point I grew up, I had children, and I actually started doing a little bit of research on Israel, the Palestinians, and just the Arab world as a whole. And you polled American people, and most people just don't care. And the reason is that we relate more with the Israelis. They're more westernized. They're more like us. And at this point, especially in lieu of the September 11th attacks, and we see how the Arab world feels about us, there is less and less and less good nature or feelings toward the Palestinians. We just don't care. And if we're going to side with anybody, it's going to be the Israelis. And because the Israelis have been our bulldog in the Middle East since their inception. And they're our friends, and they're our allies. And I think the American people see that. And it's just a perspective on how friends that I know, their feelings have changed about the whole situation. We just don't care what the Israelis do to them. They have to protect themselves. And that's just the way it is. It's sad, but it's true.
Thanks very much for the phone call, Tony. We appreciate it.
Sure. May I just say something? I'm glad for this appreciation of friendship, but, you know, Tony, I think was the name of the listener who called.
Yes.
If you're a real friend of Israel, I think you have to look for our real inherent interests. And our most important interest now is to salvage ourselves from the situation of war and animosity, because it exhausts everything, all the good that exists in this country, all the things that we could achieve here, all the things that are confiscated by the situation, by fear, by tension, by lack of hope. All these things can be reobtained if we shall have in the future tranquility, fixed borders, and good relationship with our neighbors. This is the best thing you can do for us as a friend.
Very briefly, we just have about 30 seconds left. Could you talk to us about what you foresee and what you would like to see as the American role?
Exactly as what I have told just now to Tony. There's a strange situation now. There is allegedly a negotiation between Israel and Palestine, but mainly there is a negotiation between Israel and the United States and Palestine and the United States. America has a very important role just now. There is a very strange and unique combination in Israel. There is a prime minister, Ariel Sharon. He's the only one in many years who can impose a solution on the Israelis, and they will support him. They will support almost everything that he will suggest them. And maybe he wants to be pressured by America. So this is now the task of a friend, to do something for us, for our interest, and for our future.
David Grossman, thank you so much.
Thank you.
David Grossman, novelist and author of the nonfiction book Death as a Way of Life, Israel 10 Years After Oslo. We're continuing this discussion on Wednesday with Palestinian viewpoints, more Israeli points of view. When we come back, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the roadmap to peace in the Middle East in light of the visits to Washington by Palestinian and Israeli prime ministers. Today, we're hearing opinions from Israelis. On Wednesday, we'll hear Palestinian points of view. If you've been to Israel recently, and if you have a family or friends over there, call and tell us what you're hearing from them. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address totn@npr.org. We just heard from writer David Grossman, who gave us one Israeli perspective. Joining us now is Israel Harel, the founder and former chairman of the Council of the Jewish Communities in Judea, Samaria, and Gaza. He's also a columnist for the Haaretz newspaper in Israel, and he's with us from his home in Ofra, Israel. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hello, Neil.
You just heard what David Grossman had to say. I know you differ in terms of your views about the roadmap to peace and where the way ahead lies.
Well, first of all of us Israelis hope that even those who oppose the roadmap, I believe that everybody in a part of his heart would like to think that he's wrong, and the prospects of peace in this map will materialize. However, from our experience from former and initial programs like the Oslo Pact, that with the hope is very little. We saw that after Oslo started, the Palestinians went back to the road of terror, and instead peace. Oslo had more than 3,000 fatalities. So we hope, but we are very much realistic.
If this is not the way ahead, if concessions are not the way to peace, what is?
Well, the problem is, I do believe that concessions are maybe the way. However, all the concessions are demanded from Israel. And that's why the Arabs never come to terms with Israel. Look, almost 30 years ago, it was a major war between Israelis and the Arabs, which the Arabs launched Egypt and Syria. This was the Yom Kippur War. Now, Israel, after a surprise attack, was able to win this war. At the end of the war, instead of imposing peace on the Syrians and the Egyptians, the United States came out with a plan that forced Israel to make concessions, and not those who started the war. The result was that there is no genuine peace today between Israelis and the Syrians, and with the Egyptians there's a formal peace, but a very, very cold peace. So therefore, everybody that starts a war must pay for it, as President Bush nowadays is handling the terror, the Bin Laden terror, the Al-Qaeda, as well as the Iraqi situation. I mean, those who constantly, for the last 120 years since the return of the Jews to their old homeland, there is no cease of fire of terror from the Palestinian and the Arab side. Once, and this despite that round after round of war they are losing. If after this terrible terror of suicide bombers and so on, if they would have to pay a price for it, then I believe that we could come to terms. But look, after more than a month of ceasefire, they are committed to destroy all the infrastructure of terror, and they didn't even start with it. A few hours ago, a soldier that was kidnapped a week ago was found slaughtered by terrorists. I mean, this continues all the time. It's not any more headlines, because everybody has the hope that maybe that this will work. Therefore, even the Israeli media is hiding it. It's putting it aside because not to destroy the dream. But reality is that the Arabs did not give up their lust to drive us out from this corner of the Middle East.
And I like very much the writing of Mr. Grossman, but when it comes to facing reality, he's among, I'm afraid, those who dream and not those who look upon the situation with reality.
As you know, the issue of the settlements is regarded by many people as a major roadblock to peace, that Israel must withdraw from the settlements. Is that your view?
Of course not. I was one of the founders of this movement. I am afraid that American public, I mean, not only American public, doesn't understand exactly what's going out, what are the sizes. You mentioned before the term occupation. Look, a nation is not an occupier in its own land. When you introduced me, you mentioned Judea and Samaria. Judea and Samaria is our ancient land. By the way, the size of Judea and Samaria combined is not more than one of a big ranch in Texas or Wyoming. It's not like people who don't deal with it, they don't know that the entire size of the state of Israel is not more than 12,000 square miles. That's all. And Judea and Samaria is about 2,500 square miles. That's all we are talking about. And this is a part of our ancient land that we returned. That's why we returned. Otherwise, all of us could end up maybe in the United States or somewhere else, or South America or Canada. They are big enough. We did all this effort and we made all those sacrifices to return to our homeland. So how can we be occupier in our own homeland?
So there are a lot of people who feel that eventually the Clinton plan, which basically calls for Israel to return more or less to the borders of 1967 and two independent states, that's going to be, you know, very close to something like the eventual settlement. You say that's not a good idea.
And it's not only not a good idea, it's impossible. How can you unroot a quarter of a million people that are spread out in more than 150 communities? And some of them already have its third generation. This is an unhumanistic act. I mean, this is easy to play politics from the White House in Washington to make plans for others. But this is something. Can you decide that? I know the United States. You have about 20 places that are called Shiloh, nobody even will dream to remove a Shiloh in California or in Iowa. But to remove Shiloh, which is the ancient city even before Jerusalem, how can you do it today? Shiloh, Israel, is a community of 1,200 families. Are you going to unroot them? Is this humanistic? Can any human being favor it? I mean, if you want genuine peace, let's say that in those territories, a Palestinian state is going to be established. So why can't 1,200 Jewish families live within it? Or I'm a neighbor of Shiloh, Ofra. It's also a place that has biblical roots. Why can't I live in my homeland? And about my citizenship, we will deal with it. Why can't I remain a Israeli citizen? Or if this place is annexed to Israel, a Palestinian can be a Palestinian citizen and live in Israel as it is now. We have 20% of our population is Arab population within the state of Israel. Mm. Why should people be unrooted?
Let's get another caller. Doug joins us on the line, and he's in New York City. Yes, Doug?
Hello?
Is this Doug?
No, this is Ellie.
Oh, hi. Excuse me, Ellie. We must have pushed the wrong button, but if you have a question, please go ahead.
Well, I have a comment. I have a very strong 6-point comment. The point is...
Well, I'm not sure we're going to have time for all 6 points.
No, but I will tell you that in 1962, 7 months pregnant, in Acre and in Nazareth, I was stoned by Arab people, Arabs, Arab children, Arab people. Our cars, they threw rocks at us, and you see that 2 weeks we were in Israel in 1962, there were Israeli citizens, usually innocent older people, women and children, who were murdered by Arab terrorists. This has been going on since 1948, and it's never been reported up until the last 2 years in the Western newspapers, that the Arabs were committed to push the Israelis into the sea. They flew pamphlets. They threw pamphlets over Israel in 1948 when Israel became a state. They said, "We will push you into the sea," and then they began to kept the poor Palestinians in these horrible refugee camps and would not allow them to assimilate into the Arab countries, as we allowed the DP people, displaced person people from the Second World War, to assimilate into our communities. They kept them there for a purpose because the Arab countries are committed. Their hatred of the Jews is phenomenal.
Well, let's get go back to our conversation. Thanks very much for the call, by the way. But I wanted to ask Israel Harel, we just have a couple of minutes left. I wanted to ask you, first of all, about the American role and what, in your view, is the way towards peace?
I think that if America will back us to have a policy towards the Palestinians, as American is treating the terrorists that are endangering America, then I believe that we can maybe bring at least an end to this recent war of terror of the last 3 years. America has double standards. President Bush deals those terrorists who face America with a different way, and when we want to treat those our enemies with the same treatment, then it has a different rule. You cannot have a double standards. The instinct America develops against those who attack America are the same that Israelis should develop towards those who endanger it. And once this is internalized, I believe that the Arabs themselves, the Palestinians, even the terrorist groups like Hamas and Jihad, will know there is no future for those atrocities. But once they will know that whenever Israel is in the edge of victory, America is going and saves them, as America did in the last 30 years. It saved Syria and later Lebanon, and then during the Oslo Pact, Arafat, and then when it got sick and tired from Arafat, now they're going, they are building another figure, but they don't let us finish the war with decisive victory. This is a prescription for continuous war. Once we will be able to overcome those terror attacks without Americans interfering, I believe that they will come to a conclusion that they can beat us, and then I hope this will be the beginning of a road to, I don't know if peace, but to a long ceasefire.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your time today.
You're welcome, sir. Bye-bye.
Israel Harel is the founder and former chairman of the Council of the Jewish Communities in Judea, Samaria, and Gaza. He joined us from his home in Ofra, Israel, which is located in Samaria, which many people call, of course, the West Bank. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We heard two different Israeli views on the roadmap to peace in the Middle East from two separate individuals, but what about average Israelis? Yaakov Shamir is professor of communications and journalism at the Hebrew University. He, along with a Palestinian professor, have been conducting surveys of Israeli and Palestinian public opinion to examine attitudes towards the roadmap in its various states. We'll hear the results of the Palestinian opinion poll when we hear Palestinian views on Wednesday. Right now, Yaakov Shamir joins us from his home in Tel Aviv, and welcome to Talk to the Nation.
Hello, good afternoon.
You've just heard views, the opinions of Mr. Grossman and Mr. Harel. I wonder, how representative are they?
I would say they are quite representative of the moderate left and moderate to extreme right political wings in Israel.
And how strong are those two elements at this moment in Israel?
How what?
How strong are those
how
two?
How strong?
Yes.
Well, I think the consensus right now leans more towards moderation, as we can see in our polls. And there is consistent and, in fact, high support for the roadmap, general support for the roadmap among the Israeli public. About 61% of the Israelis support in general the roadmap, although attitudes differ with respect to the specifics of the plan.
One of the interesting findings of your survey is, as we'll hear on Wednesday, the majority of Palestinians also support the roadmap, but the majority of Israelis don't believe that.
Well, this is no. This does not refer to the roadmap. As a matter of fact, we asked for the first time in our most recent survey, carried out in June, mutual recognition of national identity, the national identity of both sides. In other words, the extent to which Palestinians are willing to recognize Israel as the state of the Jewish people and Israelis willing to recognize Palestine as the state of the Palestinian people after the establishment of a Palestinian state and the resolution, you know, of the other important disputes. And this is a very important question because, as a matter of fact, it is a surrogate to very important things in dispute, like the right of return. You must know, probably know, that the Palestinian leadership rejects or does not agree to recognize Israel as the state of the Jewish people, assuming that it contradicts the right of return, and they also criticize and they don't accept President Bush's speech in Aqaba mentioning Israel as the nation of the Jews. So, and this was really quite surprising because on this question, both publics, in fact, there is a majority supporting such a mutual mutual recognition on the part of both publics. Of course, well, more Israelis support it, about 65% compared to 52% of the Palestinians. Still, this is very, very important, but even more interesting is the fact that both publics are not aware of the support of their own support in this of this recognition. In other words, are not aware of the other side's support of such a recognition.
Yaakov Shamir, we're going to have to suspend for just a moment. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about Israeli attitudes towards the roadmap to peace, and including the issue of the settlement. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, we'll have a one-on-one conversation with General John Keane, Vice Chief of the Army, the acting Army Chief of Staff, about his career, about changes in the army, and about the future of troops in Iraq and the rotation and when they might come home. So stay tuned for that tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Right now we're speaking with Yaakov Shamir, a professor of communications and journalism at the Hebrew University, who's been working on a research project involving joint public opinion polls focusing on Israeli and Palestinian public opinion on the conflict. We'll hear the Palestinian side of that equation when we hear Palestinian views on Wednesday on Talk of the Nation. But continuing our conversation, as you heard in our discussion with Israel Harel, clearly the issue of the settlements is critical in many eyes. What's public opinion about that?
Well, the picture which emerges from our settlers' sample is quite interesting, and in fact this confirms some rooted beliefs. First, contrary to those who believe that the settlements project, in the West Bank and Gaza is irreversible, there is a noticeable majority among settlers, 57%, who are willing to receive compensation from the government and move back to live within the Green Line. Now, additional 22% will eventually be willing to relocate by the government to areas which will not disturb the peace process with the Palestinians, and only 9% prefer to stay where they live, even under Palestinian rule. But this will not come about peacefully and orderly. What we see in our survey is that most settlers, about 60%, will protest vehemently and will do everything they can legally to frustrate such an agreement with the Palestinians. 13% of the settlers say they will try to resist such an agreement by all means, which is not a negligible number, and among those, a very small minority of about 2% are even willing to go as far as endangering their own family and other people in their resistance to evacuation.
You also asked in your poll about leadership. What were Israelis' attitudes towards their own leadership, towards the Palestinian leadership, and about the United States?
Okay, each public, in fact, believes that its own leader is going to stand by his commitments to the roadmap, but is very suspicious and actually does not trust that the leader of the other side is going to do that. And with respect to President Bush, standing. Israelis, the majority of Israelis, almost 80%, believe that President Bush is indeed going to push further the roadmap and continue to work for an agreement. But Palestinians are much more skeptical about that, and about 50%, even a little bit less, of the Palestinians think that Bush will stand by his commitments. About 50% of the Palestinians don't believe so.
What is the difference, or is there one, in Israeli attitudes towards, by contrast to Yasser Arafat, by the way, the new Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas?
Do you mean how Israelis feel towards Abu Mazen or Mahmoud Abbas, as he is officially called, mm-hmm. his policies? Well, Israelis are definitely much more open-minded and willing to wait and to see what Abu Mazen is going to do, compared, you know, to Yasser Arafat, who lost his credit entirely with the Israeli public. But both sides, in fact, are not very optimistic as to the outcomes, the final outcomes of this process. And only a minority on both sides believe that it eventually will lead to a political resolution.
And what's the number on that?
I think About 40% on each side believe that the roadmap process will eventually result in a political settlement.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Sure.
Yaakov Shamir is a professor of communication and journalism at the Hebrew University. He's been working on an ongoing research project involving joint public opinion polls, focusing on Israeli and public opinion on the conflict. And again, we'll hear the Palestinian side of that equation when we hear Palestinian viewpoints on the roadmap towards peace Wednesday at this time on Talk of the Nation. And let's take a phone call. Don joins us now from Hubertus in Wisconsin.
Yes, hi, Neil. Thank
hi.
You.
Sure.
My family and I are, in 2 weeks, we'll be making what's called Aliyah to Israel to become citizens of the State of Israel. We'll keep our citizenship here in the United States as well.
Can I ask why you're going?
Many people do. Primarily, my son was going to school with a boy that's going back there. His father was the Israeli ambassador to the Milwaukee area. And hopefully my wife is going to be able to continue her job in a little diminished capacity over the Internet. But primarily, I would say that we're making a statement, sort of putting our money where our mouth is. I'm a Jew by choice. Converted about 10 years ago, and we believe in the existence of the State of Israel, and I guess a good way of showing that that's what we believe in and is to move there and to try and make a go of it.
This is obviously a very challenging time to be making such a decision.
Yes, very challenging. My son's 8 years old and, very concerned about all of our safety. I'm hitting 55, and to leave my job here sort of leaves us out on a limb. But I don't want to say necessarily sympathetic or just empathetic with the situation over the last 3 years. It's boldly saying... we want to, part of what we want to be there, be a part of Israel is to show that, 500 or so have died in terrorist bombings and certainly Palestinians have suffered. We're not deterred by, we're concerned, not foolish about it, but, we'll go in there. We're looking forward to, certainly the hope that, peace can be achieved and,
I don't mean to interrupt, but you say you believe in the future of the State of Israel. Which State of Israel? An Israel that's more or less in the 67 borders, an Israel that has somehow reached an accommodation with its Palestinian neighbors, or
yes.
Or one that is involved in this cycle of conflict?
I certainly hope that the cycle of conflict could be broken.
And there are probably other futures available. I didn't mean to limit it to those two.
No. Your first speaker that you had, Mr. Haral, said that negotiations, compromise on both sides is important. And it's I would like to think that some of the settlements could remain, but as well that the Palestinians are going to certainly get what they have they negotiate for and some of the things that they need. It's distressing with Hamas, Hezbollah, putting out the demands that they have to have all of their prisoners. President Bush alluded to, that wasn't sort of foolish to let people out that have blood on their hand, as many Israelis refer to it. But we're hoping peace can be achieved. If I could offer this, the Passover every year, I have a prayer from our prayer book on the last eve of Pesach. Part of the prayer says, "O God, teach us to rejoice in freedom, but not in its cost for us and for our enemies. Let there come a day when hate and greed shall be no more, and when we will be free to rejoice without sadness and to sing without tears." And that would be Palestinians and all Arabs, and certainly for Israel.
Well, Don, thanks very much, and we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much, Neil. Appreciate it.
We appreciate it. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.